job on the technicality of a legend who recommended you. You are nothing, you are a fool, and you are a waste of time. Good night.
I've kept really quiet, but I'll tell you something. He went down in my estimation when he said that.
I don't believe personal insults help it.
Now Jack Charlton is quite right to be indignant about that, and the gentleman in the yellow hat really exists nowhere in the firmament of international football.
The 10-man board of the FAI, the clowns, are now going to put the names in a hat. They're going to pick people who they've read about in newspapers.
Give it a blam and flash it into the net. What a goal that was.
And of course, Celtic.
I agree with you.
Ronnie just wants to say the word Schweinsteiger.
Bastian Schweinsteiger.
The sporting weekend concluded on Sunday afternoon in a dramatic draw between two historic rivals. There was plenty of incidents, some great goals, penalty decisions given, penalty decisions not given. But enough about the All-Ireland Football Final. This is the Buzz.ie Football Show, and we're here to talk soccer. This week, I am joined by Gary Connaughton, as always. But, Maurice Brosnan, you are stepping into the breach in the enormous gap left by Sean Meehan. Do you think you're up to the task?
I don't know, is the honest answer. We live and learn. Like, there's something nice about, you know, like the jack of all trades is a stereotypical Irish footballer, like the guy who will fill in a series of different positions. And in lieu of that, I think I'm perfectly placed to step in for Sean.
Gary, jack of all trades, you?
Oh, yeah, I suppose. I've been drafted into GA podcast a few times as well, so Morris is going to be drafted in today, see if he can fill my boots as the jack of all trades.
Gary, though, soccer would be our specialist subject. And on that note, you're going to be filling us in later on. This is obviously a big international week for us. We've got a massive game coming up against Switzerland this Thursday. So while it is a bit of a review show, we're going to be spending it mostly looking at the Irish players, how they get on at the weekend, and maybe building up to that Switzerland game on Thursday. We'll also be talking about the Premier League, obviously. And we'll be concluding with our second football quiz. Now, last weekend, Gary, you stole it at the death.
I did.
This week, this week you're up against Morris. You got a new challenger. And I can reveal exclusively at the start of the podcast that this week's theme to the quiz is which of these Irish players won more caps. Okay. How do you feel going into that one?
Yeah, I think Morris is going to he's in the long grass for that one. I think he'll give me a good challenge there.
A quiz connoisseur. Gary, this is your primary sport, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Did you grow up calling it soccer, or were you converted by coming into these offices? Like, what the Gary Mark now has called it soccer twice, but you also did as you spoke there. Is that trying to differentiate from the GA podcast, or is that how you grew up calling it?
I'd probably call both of them football and not differentiate between the two and just kind of let people work out for themselves. I think that's a lot of people where I'm from would do.
How about you, Mark?
I think I've been calling it soccer unbeknownst to myself. Like, I'd call it football, if it was, we watching the football last night or something after Champions League match, it's obviously football. But I think in general, I probably do actually call it soccer. Like, what do you do?
Because I'm context dependent. Like, mine is, if you ask me, are you watching the football over the weekend? My brain will go straight to Kerry and Dublin,
exactly.
Obviously. But I suppose, yeah, same as the Champions League context. Like, you, in a scenario like this, where you need to differentiate it, I'd probably go with soccer, yeah. It's just an interesting, like, I've never heard that phraseology used as much as it was in Ireland until kind of recently. Even though, like, when I grew up, it was just always just Gaelic football, and there was never any sort of crossover. And yet then I think it might have all begun with you, Mark.
I am a trendsetter, all right. lads, where are we going to start this weekend? Obviously, like, let's maybe get through the Premier League match of the weekend. They were overshadowed by that incredible Gaelic football All-Ireland final. But we're going to go through, the two lads have picked out their top three things they wanted to talk about from the Premier League weekend. So, Gary, let's go with your one first.
Sure, I suppose we'll start with the big game yesterday, Spurs and Arsenal. Like you said, it was kind of lost in the mix of what was going on here, but it was actually a cracking game. It was between two good sides with tendencies to blow up at a moment's notice, as both of them did multiple times in the same game. But the one that I really enjoyed watching was Harry Kane after the game, where he had his post-match interview with Jeff Shreves on Sky Sports. And for anyone who didn't see the game, Kane was brought down late on for a possible penalty call. It wasn't given. But you suspected that he dived. And they showed it to him in the tunnel afterwards, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, so basically, for anyone who didn't see this, it was 2-2. It was near the end. Kane goes over He's trying to almost shield the ball. It's one of those that's nearly run out over the end line. He gets a little bit of a touch in the back. Was it Socrates put the pressure on him?
I think so.
I can't remember. I'm fairly sure it was. But anyway, it was one of those where he gets a touch in the back and he goes down like a sack of spuds. And then he had to analyse his own possible dive in the post-match interview with Jeff Shreves.
Now, you scored a penalty. Should you have had another one at the end?
I think so. Obviously, I'd have to watch it back here. I think it was that stage of the game where he makes a tired tackle. I think if I'm on the halfway line, I'll get it. When you're in the box, it's kind of 50-50. The ref probably thinks I'm looking for it, but all I'm trying to do is shield the ball. But it is what it is. It's one of them. It could be given in some games. It weren't today, so you get on and move on.
It's a very strange situation to be placed in when you're immediately coming off the pitch. And I think he looked at it and very quickly backed down from his argument that it was a penalty.
Yeah, you could definitely, I'd say, if you generously say he was anticipating the contact and waiting for it, but it definitely didn't look like a penalty to me anyway.
Nope, we're all in agreement on that one.
What else have we got, Gary?
This one was actually before the United game against Southampton. I've shown on BT the early kickoff in the day, but it was Rio Ferdinand and Joe Cole and Martin Keown, but they were talking about Van Dijk, who was earlier in the week crowned UEFA Player of the Year. And everyone kind of acknowledged that he deserved the award. I think he was the favourite for it going in. There was no shock that he did win it. But Rio Ferdinand and Joe Cole went off on one, saying that there's no way on this earth should a defender ever win these awards. And how can you ignore Messi and Ronaldo when they're scoring all these goals? And I thought it was hilarious, really. It's just to completely ignore like three quarters of the players on the pitch that you have to give to a striker or forward every time. But I thought it was a
win. Let's have a listen to Rio here.
There's no doubt in my mind Virgil van Dijk is the best defender on the planet today. But listen, when a man scores 50 goals in a season like Messi did, or Cristiano's won 3 trophies this season, yeah, the effect he's had in a new championship and at national level as well, you can't look beyond that. I don't care. And people say, oh, it's a bit boring that them two are still in it, but they're putting up numbers that's never been seen before for 12, 15 years. You can't look beyond that. And I'm a centre-half, and I'm delighted that he's won it, and I think he's a worthy winner. But when you've got a man scoring 50, man, you can't do that. You can't do it. I just won't have it.
A separate award, doesn't it? Messi and for Ronaldo.
The best.
Van Dijk deserves it. And I think it's about time that we respected the other jobs that people do. This eye-catching, isn't it? All this brilliant skill and flashes and brilliant moments. But what about the bread and butter defending?
The hardest thing to do in the game is so score easy. A goal, Martin.
I can't reward a slide tackle. You can't have a centre-half winning a Ballon d'Or.
Why not? Of course you
like,
can.
You can't, because
that's a total
Van
lack of
Dijk.
Respect.
Now, listen, if I was a manager, I'd sign you, Mark. If I was a manager, I'd sign you. You need a centre-half to win things. But people pay their money in the stadium to watch Messi, watch Ronaldo, watch goals, watch skills. You know, Van Dijk probably grew up wanting to be, I think he said he wanted to be Ronaldinho. He didn't even want to be Van Dijk.
Morris, I know you love your defenders. You've been in many sports. You've been talking with the likes of Thomas Sullivan for the last 24 hours non-stop. Do you think Van Dijk was deserving of that award, or has Rio actually got some sense, speaking some sense in terms of the fact that the hardest thing in football is actually put the ball into the net?
No, the premise of his argument is wrong. It's actually Joe Cole who takes it to another level, but the premise is the idea that, oh, like, you can't have a defender winning. That's actually not true. Like, in any sport, the player who succeeds in his position should get the award. Like, that's, I don't know why we have to explain that to a professional footballer as a pundit. The problem, and we talked about this later, the problem I think is that it's kind of like a grasping thing where you haven't put enough thought into it. You're put on the spot, and then suddenly you craft an argument that you might not even necessarily believe, but you're down the rabbit hole.
Jesus, none of us would ever have done that like that, would we?
Like, it's kind of arrowed, I think, in 2006 was the best time to this, like, your defensive contribution versus what you do elsewhere. But the idea that, and even the idea that, you know, that it's not true to say that it's a lesser skill set, so that he grew up wanting to be Ronaldinho or whatever, therefore the next best thing was to be a defender. Like, if you were to follow along that logic, that means that Messi or Ronaldo would be great centre backs, which is patently not true. Like, that's, it's a different skill set. It's entirely different basis within the game. Like, it's not a lesser of the lesser skill, you know what I mean? It's not like you withdraw back down the line. Like, they're two different skill sets. There's entirely different aspects to both of them. And the fact that the professional opponents can't differentiate that is kind of bizarre, really.
Yeah, I only, like, I had a very short-lived soccer career, and I wasn't much good at anything in the game. But there was one skill I had perfected, and that was the slide tackle. And for them to disrespect the slide tackle...
Your one skill?
Yeah, so much. It hurt me. It really pained me deep inside. So, yeah, I think we're all in agreement here that that the two boys, these are professional footballers all your time. You're far better footballers than all three of us ever put together, but you don't have a clue what you're talking about.
I just want to say that Joel Cole line is one of the worst lines of punditry I've ever heard.
Which one?
The Van Dijk wanted to be Ronaldinho. Even Van Dijk didn't want to be Van Dijk. It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. That's like saying Messi was growing up wanted to be Maradona. Even Messi didn't want to be Messi. That's not how it worked.
Yeah, well, I suppose what he means is that Van Dijk didn't want to be the player that Van Dijk turned out to be. That he wanted to be the... You know, everybody grows up thinking they want to be the swashbuckling attacker, getting on the ball. I don't think, like, it does work, as in Messi did want to be Messi. He wanted to be that type of player.
I suppose, but I think it's...
But why is that, why is that relevant to whether or not he's been the best
exactly.
player? Like, why is the... I don't understand why... It's like they're two different conversations.
I would say if you go down to a level in football, nearly every professional defender in football at the minute... was playing at 11 at some stage when they were younger, where they were just running the show. Mm. Like, because that's how good they are at football. If you're playing if you're Van Dijk and you end up playing for a Sunday league team or whatever, you're going to be like, put this lad in central midfield, put him up front and get him on the ball all the time, because he's going to destroy everybody and just like, he's that good. It's just that when it comes into then, as it goes up the leagues and goes into this upper echelons of professionalism, that you end up, you know, well, you're not as technically gifted as Lionel Messi, so we're going to move you back the field a little bit and become a defender. Like, that's as just what you're saying. Like, it's neither here nor there.
Yeah, last season Rio Ferdinand was all for Modric getting it, who scored two goals for Real Madrid and two goals for Croatia. So he's not like, and Salah scored 50. Or Messi scored 50, so I don't think his argument holds up there either.
Lastly, Gary, you have worries. We had worries last week, and those worries have not been appeased or squashed in any way about poor old Javi Gracia. His days are numbered at Watford.
And you feel sorry for him, because he did a savage job at Watford last year. They came eighth, and going into that season, everyone was like, there's people picking Watford to be relegated, and there was people picking him, he's going to be the first manager sacked, which I suppose wasn't a bad prediction, considering Watford's form for that. But this season's not going well for them anyway. I think if they lost against Newcastle yesterday, he'd be out of a job right now. He still might be, if it's Watford, like, so, you know.
Like, the other thing on that is Newcastle. Mm. There's 4 points in the last two games for this Newcastle team that weren't supposed to get any all season. Like, Steve Bruce, I don't know, lads. He could perform the miracle. They could stay up.
But yeah, is there, though, like, is there, like, Newcastle fans kind of discontent, right? Like, is there still some, say Steve Bruce does a decent job and gets them organised, like, what was the entire point always with Newcastle fans, that we have a way higher ceiling if we got proper investment? And so, like, there, I don't think if Bruce performs, it undermines Newcastle's core point that the club has got huge potential that is not being maximised, and that is, maybe that's entirely separate issue to the manager, actually. It probably is, to be honest.
Yeah.
But that level of discount, I don't think is misplaced. And I really hate to see that, oh, look at, you know, Bruce sticking it back to Newcastle fans. Their core point was correct. Like, they're still right in that that club has a way higher potential. Like, that is a tailor-made club that should be a top seven challenge side. Like, when you look at a club like Leicester, like, that's, to me, that's what Newcastle could and should be.
Yeah, it's. I think there's two different things. There's the general football audience reaction to Steve Bruce managing Newcastle, and the Newcastle fans' reaction.
Precisely.
So the general football audience is like, Newcastle are goose, they're going to get relegated, Steve Bruce is over them, this is going to be a disaster. And for the Newcastle fans, it's almost a worst case scenario is that Steve Bruce keeps them up, because Ashley's going to be like, yeah, this is going grand. What's the issue here at all? We finished 17th, it's grand. Yeah. But speaking of, you mentioned Leicester there. Morris, I know you, we were chatting a bit before the podcast going, what are the three things you want to talk about? And first on your list was Jamie Vardy.
Yeah, like, this is the archetypical Jamie Vardy goal, to the extent where you're kind of baffled about how teams keep getting being caught out by it.
Yeah.
Like, it goes back to the title winning season and the incredible volley that year against Liverpool. But since then, this is what he does. Like, and it's kind of...
Chilwell with the ball over the top. Vardy, one touch, bang.
Sprint, yeah. So as soon as you've turned your defender, so you're he's sprinting in behind, two of them are sprinting back to get to the ball, the keeper often, most of the time, decides that he's going to come for us.
Yeah.
Bizarrely. And it ends in a goal.
Yeah, and Vardy doesn't, like, it's that fact that when I say one touch, that touch is him striking the ball. It's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Doesn't need to control it at all, just comes over his head. It's outrageous. It's like, it's such a satisfying goal to just watch over and over again.
And he loves it as well. Like, he loves scoring that type of goal. And he's like pulling the piss basically with celebrating afterwards, because Jamie Vardy would be absolutely delighted if he touched the ball twice in a match and scored two goals. I don't think he has any interest in coming short and trying to link up play. Like, he literally just wants, let it in over the top and I'll stick my boot in it and hopefully I might bury one, you know.
I remember myself and Mick from this neighbourhood, we were chatting on the Build Up podcast a couple of weeks ago, before the start of the season, making our predictions, and I predicted that Leicester would finish in the top six and that they had such a good midfield, they had some decent defenders as well, but my only worry for them for the season was the fact that JB Vardy was getting on in years, he was going to start losing that yard of pace. And his finishing, you know, he might not get it nearly as many goals. Brendan Rodgers seems to have worked miracles. He's really come back into the nearly almost the form that he was in when they won the title. Like, he's absolutely sticking it to me with the last couple of games.
Is Jamie Vardy still underrated not by the general public, but by opposition teams? Like, why do teams still play a high line against Jamie Vardy? Do they still think they get away with that? And if so, how?
I think every team just wants to play a high line now.
Yeah.
And they just play it regardless, like, pretty much regardless of who the opposition is, unless it's maybe Man City or Liverpool. But apart from that, teams are just going to fancy their chances against Leicester. They're like, oh, like, in fairness, he's not going to do it every game, you know?
Yeah, Bournemouth, I think, as well, would want to go out and try and play football.
They're the one
them.
Team that won't change for the likes of Leicester is Bournemouth. They'd be like, no, they don't change for anyone. So.
But they look so tactically astute. Like, if you watch, I know the result might have shown it. They actually really frustrated Man City last week.
Yeah.
Like, there was a lot about them that you... I thought this is like exactly what you should do, prepping for your opposition, making them really difficult. They got unlocked by... It was David Silva's pass on the inside there, which was brilliant. And he does, like, once in those kind of games, he can just become a flat-track bully when a team is sitting deep. I just don't understand how you don't show some sort of adaptability when you go. I genuinely just think it's down to we still fancy our chances regardless that we're like, he's a tad underrated.
I know someone that was not happy with that result anyway was you, Mark Farley, after getting rid of Youri Tielemans out of your fantasy football team and only for him to come back and bite you.
Lads, we all knew it was going to happen. I mentioned the Build Up podcast there last week. I had a shout, a big shout. We have a big shout every week where actually, if you haven't listened to the Build Up podcast yet, every week we put it out to the public. We give you the opportunity to win an incredible prize, 2 cakes and a sports biography. If you can give us a big shout, which is 25-1 or greater, and it ends up coming off at the weekend. So I had predicted, purely based on the players I had sold in my fantasy football wildcard last weekend, that Gylfi Sigurdsson, Youri Tielemans and Harry Kane would all score any time in a treble that came in at around 25-1. Tielemans scored, Kane scored, and Gylfi Sigurdsson got his first assist of the season. It was not far off coming off. Like, this is, if you even, anyone who has read balls over the years has followed us on social media. If you've ever seen a tweet or a post about one of us in the, someone on the balls account saying that they sold a player and therefore they're going to score on fantasy football, it was me. And it always came through. I can remember one distinctly on Stephen's Day where I had sold, I think it was Papi Cisse and Coutinho. And I said it at 10 o'clock in the morning before the deadline. I was like, just sold Papi Cisse and Coutinho so you can count on the two of them to score today. And sure enough, later that day, both of them scored. It's constantly happening to me. Tielemans is, I decided, having based purely on the match of the day highlights, that he was playing a little bit deeper this season and was going to keep getting the assist to the assist. Nope. Gets himself a goal and gets an assist.
You got rid of Callum Robinson as well.
I got rid of Callum Robinson. Yeah, I did indeed. Of course I did.
And
another goal
and
assist.
Tammy Abraham.
Tammy Abraham, I brought him in the fantasy football, or in the wild card. I had him and I bought Mason Mount on Monday, right? He was 6.1 million. And I said, I don't know if I want Mason Mount, but I'm going to buy him before he goes up in price. He went up then that night to 6.2. Clever Mark. Bought him at 6.1. Anyway, later that week, I decided, no, actually, I'm going to buy Tammy Abraham. So I sold Mason Mount, brought in Harry Wilson. Then I really wanted to buy Haller. So then I was like, did a bit of rejigging with my whole team. And I was like, if I actually, you know, I go with Mount and I go with Haller up front. So then I bought Mason Mount back at 6.2, having owned him at 6.1 earlier in the week, and sold Tammy Abraham. And then Abraham went and scored 2 goals.
That basically sums up your fantasy life, I think, doesn't it?
It sums up my life, really, never mind my fantasy life. So, yeah, me and Leicester are we're not on the best of terms at the minute. Now, one other person I was looking at for that 6 million role, it's very hard, you see, to fill. To be honest, what happened was, as well, I upgraded to James Maddison, which is why I didn't have Tielemans. I had Tielemans all season, when I say all season, only 3 weeks. Got James Maddison in at 7 million because he was doing everything for Leicester the week before. And then I was left with 6 million. 6.2 million, whatever it was, to spend on another midfielder. Didn't know. I love Harry Wilson. Like, even last year, he was brilliant in the Championship. Mount, obviously, is doing bits. And then the other one I was looking at was Daniel James. Mm. Didn't go for him because I don't trust United, nor should I. But Daniel James could already be United's best player. And that's saying something. 3 weeks into the job,
he hasn't been there long enough to be corrupted.
Yeah, Morris, he wanted to talk with United, funny, as a disgruntled United fan.
Yeah, it's funny you bring up that, right? Because, like, there's moments as a sports journalist where, say, for, you know, you have, this always happens, actually. It often happens to you, Mark. Like, you have a theory and then the stats disprove the theory.
Or, sorry, what?
Which is kind of a horrible feeling. Or you have a really nice feeling where you have a theory and then the stats prove your theory and it becomes, like, it's a really nice moment. But it's an even better moment than that is when you have a theory and then somebody else does all the work, gets the stats and proves your theory. So I've been banging a drum in the office for the last couple of weeks now. Of the year, talked off Gary about this. The amount of times in a game where United will have, it's basically 11 v 11 in one half. Like, United will have everybody pressed up, the opposition will have everybody withdrawn, and it's just, they cannot create a chance in that scenario. Like, it's, they struggle so, so badly.
This is something as well that's come back for years, because that was the David Moyes issue. Remember, David Moyes broke the record for crosses or something in a game where they just had, like, all the possession and all the territory, but just could never fashion a chance.
Which is actually the example we talked about in the office, myself and Gary. But this season, it's happening against Crystal Palace, it's happening against Southampton, and happening against Wolves, where they can't, they like, defensively, United have actually been pretty impressive as a whole. I mean, I think when Wan-Bissaka had something like 100% successful tackles, he was in double-digit tackles at the weekend, which is indicative of something further out the field, sure, but nevertheless, like, defensively, they're starting to hold their own. Their problem, and the problem for a while, has been further up the field. So then, to my delight, not to my delight, but to the proof of my theory, I logged on to Twitter this morning, and Andy Crafton of The Athletic had done an article where he talked about why Mourinho was right, what he said after the Chelsea game. So he said, you know, you don't have enough fullbacks overlapping, their strikers don't score 6 yard goals, they've had 9 since August 2016 for Rashford and Martial combined, and only 3 headed goals between them. So that the problem is when there's that full press. And when he was talking about what Mourinho said, this goes back to after the Chelsea game, Mourinho had a warning for Manchester United, and he said, he pointed to one issue, and he said, look, today the defensive line, the midfield, the attack, they were not compact. I think United will find it much more difficult to play with teams against teams with low compact blocks. If the blocks are low blocks, it'll be really difficult for them without a pure striker. So what he's talking about is that the low block, when you've got like two banks basically right in front of the 18 yard line, like from your box out, and it's just break us down. That's, and you, so when we go back to that Bournemouth game, for example, there was a really similar scenario when for Sterling's goal, Sterling came in, you know, he cuts off, so if people didn't see it, he's flying down the left wing, cuts in onto the, from like drops right shoulder, cuts in off the wing, he's flying, and David Silva's at the edge of the box, picks the pass perfectly, and Silva scores. And I've seen Martial make that run literally hundreds of times. Like, Martial is always doing that run, and he's no player who's capable of picking out that pass. And it's kind of funny that, like, in a way, Mourinho is right, and Adam's article is very good, and he goes on to show they're already, their massive reliance on somebody like Daniel James. Like, 45% of the ball went through Daniel James on the left flank. They're looking at, they're still at this stage looking at wingers to unlock teams, and to me that's down to this the really frustrating Manchester United way. Like, the, going back to the Moyes, it's funny you went back to the Moyes issue. United still want to play this traditional, you know, the man up top, your wingers are creating your chances, and they don't have a number 10, and they haven't had a number 10 who can create the way that Silva, or either of the Silvas actually can, or the way that Firmino does now, where he drops in like as a false nine, drops in and picks those passes. United don't have that. And, like, in a way, Mourinho is right to point this out, and Adam doesn't go into this, but I was just thinking, like, Mourinho is right to point it out, but then I look back, Mourinho's signings while he was Manchester United manager, Eric Bailly, Ibrahimovic, Mkhitaryan, Pogba, Victor Lindelof, Romelu Lukaku, Matic, Alexis Sanchez, Fred, Diego Dalot, Lee Grant, which is a different thing. All traditionally players who would play in the centre, play in the left, play up front, but never a number 10. And the last number 10 United bought, a true number 10, is Mata under Moyes, But since then, they haven't had that player. And it's so, like, it's why they will not unlock these teams, because they can't have a player who can pick that pass. And it's the, like, Adam's article goes to show they're still trying to rely on their wingers to do that. But that, I think that model is nearly dead now. Like, it's so easy to defend.
But they also have the issue that they don't have a number nine. As he was saying, as Mourinho was saying about scoring goals, you know, the score from 6 yards out, it's... Like, is it a 10 you need, or is it, like, you see, he obviously bought Ibrahimovic and Lukaku, so that was an issue he was trying to solve. Like, is it someone like a Harry Kane, when we talked last week about Harry Kane having to stop playing in the 10 role and actually just go back to what he's good at, which is finishing and being there in the end of stuff? Like, is it someone there? If you are going to persist with get your wingers on the ball, maybe Martial can drop in and develop into a, not necessarily a 10, because he's probably not, he's still going to be coming off the left or whatever, but that... You have someone there who is actually, if you are going to put balls in the box, is going to be there to finish them.
I think that they don't have the fullbacks. I think that's the problem. Because if you look at Liverpool's team, and I know you said Firmino drops a bit deeper, but Liverpool's main creative outlets are Robertson and Alexander-Arnold. And Man United don't have fullbacks like that. They have Wan-Bissaka, who's a good player, and you mentioned his defensive stats. But going forward, he's nowhere near that level. And then either is Luke Shaw, and Ashley Young definitely isn't. So I think that's as big an issue, if not more so, than the number 10. But it all feeds into the same thing.
Yeah, and like, that's probably true, but at the top of the hierarchy, for me, I still think it's the... Do you remember that time, Gary, when it was Liverpool had a brief spell of struggle, and it coincided with Firmino coming back unfit from Brazil duty, and he... Like, the difference he makes to... Yeah. This is a point that's been made elsewhere, that like people still are obsessed about Firmino's like ball stats and not the influence he has within a game. Like, so I think I remember if you actually delve into those stats, he is actually way more impressive. Say, for example, something like secondary assists as opposed to... But what, like, that's a separate issue. But Firmino's influence in his ability to drop into that space that we always see him do, like, and that whether that's swinging a ball for, he'll drop into the hole and he'll play it wide, and he always has Arnold or Robinson coming off that side for him, or he'll drop in and he'll play a pass through. Say, for example, what he did for Salah's penalty against Arsenal, the way he dropped into the hole and picked that pass through there. Like, my point is that Firmino is key to all of that. Like, Mane and Salah, in the same way that Rashford and Martial make those runs, but they need somebody who can orchestrate in and around that, and United don't have that player. And they haven't since, like, Mata was kind of, but even he didn't really have pace the way that somebody like Bobby Firmino has pace. Like, it's such a glaring hole in the entire team. It would tie so much more together, and the fact that it isn't addressed is just is so frustrating.
As you can tell, Morris is very frustrated.
I was going to say, I'll tell you a type of player, Morris, who can unlock opposition defences. You know, get at them, get just in that hole in behind the striker, maybe create something from nothing. Maybe create something towards the end of the game and bag your side an equaliser through a really well-worked assist. When I say well-worked, by falling over and just letting the ball roll onto someone to finish it, is Jack Grealish. What the name of God was that about at the weekend?
Like, there's so many different elements of this conversation that we could get into. Like, the first, I think there's the initial decision. Everything comes back to the initial decision. Like, there's the VAR conversation and the fact that people are becoming obsessive about VAR. Like, VAR, I don't think me and Gary had this conversation off air. Like, in that scenario, because he's blown the whistle before the goal, like, what is VAR supposed to do? Like, do you go back?
You can't
give the goal.
Yeah, you can't go back to VAR.
Say if it could. Say if it could. Say, for example, that rule wasn't there. Like, say, for example, the people blaming VAR, like, they said, well, VAR should be able to accommodate for these kind of mistakes. Like, in that scenario, the reason VAR, that rule isn't there, is literally because what is their option? Like, you can't... their defenders have stopped when they've heard the whistle, so you can't give the goal, because the goal comes after it. Do you go back and give... the foul, the real foul, is the first one, the push. And then the other one is kind of a legs collide. He doesn't appeal for it, the other defender doesn't. Like, that's... I don't think that's necessarily a penalty. So do you go back to that infringement, or because you're saying that he's gone down easy? Like, where what happens after that? It's too ambiguous. Like, there's too much grey area within that to decide what do you revert back to. So once he'd blown the whistle, so it all goes back to the referee. Like, the referee is the one who made a boss of this. And I mean, in terms of what he thought he saw. I think this is the, as a separate point, I think this is the result of years of people hounding referees about not pulling up on diving, that you've now seen Daniel James last week, Jack Grealish this week, being booked for diving. It's like the referee is trying to counteract for the years of this stuff that has been let go unnoticed. And it's why the only way you're going to tackle diving really is retrospectively. That's the only possible way, doing it in game in the moments of this, it's too hard to expect a referee to a judge in those scenarios. And to my mind, you shouldn't be booking players for diving anyway. Just do it respectfully and give them a one game ban, but don't do it this way because it leaves too much up in the air.
I think that the whole thing about the VAR and referees is that they let everything play out now, and you see it with offside calls where it's fairly obvious that a player is offside, but oh, we let it go and we just check with VAR. And I think that's what should have happened there. Whereas, unless he was certain, and
but that's the referee's fault, not VAR's fault.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. That's the referee's fault. We should have let it go. And look, if it's a dive, then we can go. We'll see it, and we can pull it back, and the goal will be disallowed. I think that's just the obvious solution there. It was a ridiculous call because Jack Grealish was very clearly fouled.
So that's the last we're going to talk about Kevin Friend in this show. It's time to crown our scoundrel of the week. So, lads, scoundrel of the week this week. Our nominations are Kevin Friend for his role in Jack Grealish, the Jack Grealish incident that saw Aston Villa denied a draw. What else have we got? We've got Enda Stevens. Enda Stevens is nominated this week for a ridiculous piece of skill for the second time in 3 weeks. He nutmegged Aston Villa Huerta before setting up a goal for Sheffield United. This man's outrageous. He's really settled into the Premier League very well. And Gary, you're going to be chatting about him later on in more depth when we get to our Irish roundup.
Yeah.
Exactly. My other nominee is I've got two nominees, but one of them is Paul McShane for the fact that, is Paul McShane not from Wicklow? I thought we were all in agreement that Paul McShane was from Wicklow.
He was definitely born in Wicklow, but I wonder if there's, well, you're going to find out now.
Yeah, he was up on his wife's Instagram story at the weekend, and he shared that he was standing up for Ron Levine watching it on television during the All-Ireland final, and he shared it on Instagram on his story with the caption "Up the Dubs." So
yeah, he played for Greystones, like,
yeah,
that's weird.
I wonder, does he have Dublin blood? Is his parents from Dublin or something like that?
Are Dublin the most, well, maybe it's just because they produce the most, actually this is the stuff before I've even proposed the theory, I've now disproved the theory. The reason that so many football players, I was going to say soccer players, support Dublin is because they produce some money. But like, Darragh O'Shea to Ireland 21 was in The Hill, so was Brian Maher, the Pats goalkeeper, Paul McShane. Like, clearly has even extended to him this running behind the Dubs. But it's like Robbie Keane was on his Instagram stories, as he tends to do, supporting Dublin as well. Like, there, it seems to be widespread.
Well, whatever about them, like Robbie Keane being from Dublin, it speaks more to my theory, which is how about me theory with no stats, Morris. I just base it on people I know from Wicklow. That Wicklow people are the least patriotic about their own county of any county in the country. They're just mini Dubs. And I used to say this to people who remember Mikey Traynor used to work here, and Mikey's from Wicklow. And I'd abuse him all the time. I'm like, ah, sure, you're from Wicklow. You're a wannabe Dub anyway. And he'd just go, yeah. And if this is the case, maybe Paul McShane is actually a Dub and that we've been wrong all these years that he's not, you know, maybe he always, like you're saying, he's Dublin parents or whatever. But it just speaks, I'm going to ignore any facts like that and just let it confirm my theory that Wicklow people are just all wannabe Dubs. Two more nominees to go here for Scoundrel of the Week. Jamie Vardy for that goal. That was a very scoundrelous thing to do.
Automatically get in for that goal.
Yeah, very 100%. Cheeky. And lastly, Alfredo Morelos. I don't care how long he has it. I don't care the reason behind it, but his haircut is ridiculous. And frankly, it needs to be cut. I'll let people have whatever hair they want in general. Like, you know, the Paul Pogba stuff, all of that. No issue. But have you seen it? Like, the man literally has half a head of hair. He's gone with a normal haircut on one side of his head, split it down the middle, and just shaved the other side.
Speaking of, can I make a very late addition to this on the point of Morales, but also on Scoundrel of the Week? Did you see his miss when Fraser Forster turned around to show him how much he'd missed by? anyone didn't see this, it's actually kind of like the Jamie Vardy scenario. Like, the ball is dropping and he tries to hit it, he's coming in from the right wing, the ball is dropping, and he tries to hit it on his right foot, but trying to hit it on the near post, which is, it was never going to work. So he tried to land it on the inside of Forster, and so obviously the ball went wide, but Forster's response was to turn around, and he's already got a pretty big wingspan, but illustrate by holding his both arms out, like, demonstrating,
I didn't both see that bit,
and showing him just by how far he'd actually missed. I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, because actually it was funny, I was watching the game and Gareth was in the room, and we were just talking about Morales' haircut and him going on. I was like, actually, this isn't a good sign, because Rangers had a good bit of play at that stage. I was like, this lad's actually probably the best player coming on. And as he said it, this lad's probably the best player. The ball came to him and he took that shot. So there was uproarious laughter in our house, and I missed that. But I think that's definitely worthy of Scoundrel of the Week. So Fraser Forster is our second ever Scoundrel of the Week, following the footsteps of David Louise. David, if you have the trophy, if you can tip up there to Glasgow for a minute and hand that over to Fraser, we'd be very happy.
We'll tweet that clip out from the Buzz Twitter later on.
Do surely. Now it's time to talk about the Irish players. Right, Gary, very big weekend for us. Weekend before an international break. Mm. Which of the lads were playing at the weekend? How did they get on?
Well, we had a few lads who didn't play. More important,
that's the worry.
Perhaps more importantly, yeah. Sean Maguire got injured. He got a ball in the face, I think, in training during the week, and in his eye.
Yeah.
And he then got high blood pressure in the eye, I think, and he couldn't play because of it. Now he's arrested, so he's actually out of the internationals.
Yeah, this is one. It's actually a weird thing. I've heard about this stuff like this before, even with like fractured eye sockets or that. Yeah. That it's just a dangerous thing. And I don't know if he has high blood pressure in his eye or there's a risk if he starts,
okay.
if he overexerts himself, exactly. If any kind of strenuous physical activity that it would cause a rise in his blood pressure and then could possibly damage his eye.
And that's it's a bit of a killer because I was talking last week about how I think he should be starting for Ireland this week. But
yeah, we're talking about him becoming a left winger for us.
Shane Duffy was dropped by Brighton. Yeah. Which our man Mountain, Shane Duffy, who we love so much and he's such an important player for us, and Brighton have switched to a three at the back this season and it hasn't worked out for him, and he was dropped for the game against Man City.
Yeah, like they're becoming mini Man City nearly, Brighton, and like we were talking about it again, we're chatting about him being forced to become a ball playing centre half, which is probably not his ideal type of role, so it's going to be an interesting one there. Like if that is the case and that prolongs, he's better getting out of there as quick as he can to a club that's going to play a different style that suits him better.
I just wonder, was it for the Man City game because of the style they play and how quick they are that it wouldn't suit him? But I think he might come back in. I don't know.
In scenarios like that, I always tend to look to the very reasonable international fans on Twitter. So a quick search to Shane Duffy's name. There was some talk maybe hit a small knock, but there's a prevailing theory that... And Mark, a theory that I've heard you talk about, that Graham Potter wants to play a lot of football. That's what he's about. And that Shane Duffy isn't good with his feet. And that could be very problematic in that scenario. That's trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. I don't know if Duffy fit. If that's true, if that's the way that they're going to go, I don't know if he fits into that system.
We're not going to keep bashing Graham Potter, though, because he did give us some encouragement over the weekend. Aaron Connolly made his Premier League debut. He's only 19. He came on for 25 minutes. Now I know... The game was essentially over at his contest at that stage, but he played in midweek in the League Cup and he scored and got man of the match.
Yeah, exactly. And it shows you just how quick Potter is to give people a chance if they are impressing. So that's great to see.
He looks like he's going to be getting consistent minutes now at Brighton, which is huge. And he's part of Stephen Kenny's under-21 squad. I wouldn't be surprised to see him in the senior setup before too long if he keeps that form up. But the two names, Irish names, that stood out the weekend were definitely, and we mentioned them briefly already, Enda Stevens and Callum Robinson. The two of them were absolutely savage against Chelsea. I don't even know how. Me and Morris were in the office. We were watching the game, and they were the two best players on the pitch. Apart once Sheffield United came into the game, Robinson scored a goal, and he made the other force the own goal at the end to claim the equaliser. Enda Stevens assisted Robinson. There was some great stats on Twitter I seen from @BladeAnalytic.
I'm just looking at them here. Yeah,
it's a Sheffield United account, and. He tweets out various stats about Sheffield United, obviously, and the one they put up a couple about Enda Stevens. So out of fullbacks, that's left backs, right backs, and wing backs in the Premier League so far this season, Enda Stevens has the most successful dribbles in the Premier League, and so he's not proven he's not just going forward.
Yeah, exactly. He's 11. He's tied with Lewis actually on 11. So the two of them are together. Yeah, no one's at more.
And then to prove his defensive chops as well, he has the third most tackles out of everyone in those positions. So he's doing it at both ends.
Yeah.
And that's for a player who I actually spoke to Enda Stevens earlier in the year, and he spoke about his journey in football, about how he went to England when he was younger and he went to Villa, he didn't appreciate it, didn't make the most of his opportunities, dropped down the league. To see him come back now at this stage, he's like 28, to do what he's doing in the Premier League, it's amazing. And it's very similar to what happened to Matt Doherty last year. He's making a similar impact as Sheffield United, and hopefully it continues because he's potential to be a massive player.
It's further putting adding credence to our argument last week that perhaps Ireland should switch to 3-5-2 or three at the back, three centre backs and two wing backs.
But the Enda Stevens story is particularly interesting because, I guess Gary mentioned, I would actually encourage people to go and look up that interview if you can. In that interview, he talked about working under the old Sligo Rovers manager,
Paul Cook.
He worked under Paul Cook, and that was the first time that he'd been properly coached over in England. That's what he wanted. He wanted to be properly coached. And I like whatever happens to Sheffield United this year. It's very clear this whole idea of the overlapping centre backs, and we've all seen. I think that Twitter account is brilliant, by the way. Like you get moments where last week you had a moment where Enda Stevens is playing as a striker, their centre back had stood in as a left winger, and McGoldrick had stood in as a centre back. Like just this positional rotation, which is really clever, but it's so obvious that like the effect of good coaching is what I'm getting at here. Like Stevens in this current system, regardless of whether or not how Sheffield United do this year, it's still the evidence still there that suits him, and I think that's worth bearing in mind that there are a lot of players who like need that sort of like coaching to reach their potential. He's clearly one of them.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about the Ireland game in Switzerland soon and what formation they might go with. But Callum Robinson was again brilliant as well, playing up front. He's kind of has a bit of a free role in that he's a striker, but he can kind of roam. And I can't say how impressed I am with Callum Robinson. I think he's going to be Ireland's most important player for the remainder of this qualification campaign. If he's given the opportunity and he's played in the right position, and I think he's our most important player for the rest of the qualification campaign. He's the best Irish player along with Stevens in the Premier League at the moment. And I know they've only been there for four games, but every time Robinson has played for Ireland, and I've seen him play for Preston as well, I've never seen him play poorly. He's impressed me every time. So I don't know what you think, but I think he's going to be massive for Ireland.
It is also just to be a bit pessimistic with the thing as well at the same time, is David Goldrick was dropped, Ollie McBurney. I think that was one of those that were worried about, that was almost in wait, and it was actually going to be which of Robinson or Goldrick, because obviously McBurney cost much, and what he did in the championship last season and the fact that he came on and got the goal last weekend. You would hope though that McGoldrick is going to see significant game time going forward throughout the league, given that he was Sheffield United's player of the year.
He will because McGoldrick is 31 years old, I think. Yeah. Like he's not going to play every game in the Premier League, but he came on, he played half an hour off the bench when Sheffield United were looking, chasing that equaliser, and he played really well. So even if he doesn't necessarily start every game, and I think he will start 50% of them, if not more, then he's still going to have an impact.
We talked about if we went to three at the back, that would Seamus Coleman be able to play in the centre of the back or as one of those central three? Poor Jamie didn't have a great time at the weekend.
It wasn't a good game for Coleman. Everton lost. Well, they won 3-2, but he was kind of at fault for the first Wolves goal, where the ball
the ball came across the face goal, and he was coming running backwards and tried to stop and control the ball at the same time, and controlled it, but didn't manage to stop. Kind of fell over the ball, and he perfectly teed it up for a Wolves goal.
It was unfortunate, but I was looking at the Liverpool Echo there just before we came in to do the podcast, and they said they were worried about how exposed he looked defensively in that game. Now again, that's not to say that the Seamus Coleman, no one's giving out with Seamus Coleman, but it was a bad day at the office for him.
He probably doesn't have a whole pile of support in front of him either at Everton these days, seeing as they're playing with about 15 attacking midfielders.
I suppose one other one in the Championship that just stood out was Jason Knight played again for Derby County. So he's only 18. He made his league debut last week in the draw with West Brom, and he got actually man the match in that one. He played the full 90 minutes for Derby again. Now they lost 3-0 at Brentford, which was a bad result for them, but it's encouraging to see him getting good, and he looks like he's going to be a big player for Derby as they go for promotion again this year.
What about the Stoke contingent?
McLean started left wing. He had been playing left back pretty much exclusively. Ward started. I know he's retired from international. Scott Hogan came off the bench in that one, so they're all kind of playing.
No game time for Collins?
No, he's injured. He had to withdraw from the under 21 squad. That only came out yesterday. So on Saturday we were wondering, because he's either captain for Stoke when he plays, or then he doesn't play. So it's a bit.
He played the first game this season.
Yeah,
that was just normal. Then he captained them in the League Cup. Then didn't play a game. Then captained them in the Championship. Then didn't play. Yeah. So yeah, it's an incredible record to have so far this year.
James Collins scored a penalty for Luton. He was after been drafted. He's a replacement for Sean Maguire now that he's dropped out of squad. It's interesting that Shane Long was kept out again. And he did play for Southampton at the weekend. He came on against United.
Yeah, that was bizarre. But again, McCarthy, to be fair, has said all along that he wants lads who are playing regular football.
Yeah.
And Collins has been playing football and scoring so far this season. So you have to say, like, just because Long comes on in one game doesn't mean that he should be in ahead of Collins.
Is Shane Long's only solution in this scenario? I know Mick McCarthy said this about James McCarthy, that he would have no issue if he dropped down a division. Like, is Shane Long's only option in that scenario to drop down to the Championship if he is going to be on the fringes of Southampton, as it looks like? Say, for example, you mentioned Stoke there, Scott Hogan came on that day as well. Like, there's the fact that, say, if Scott Hogan starts getting a run of games with Stoke, does he become above Shane Long if he's playing at that standard? Dan Crowley, again, came on that game as well, actually. Does he go above James McCarthy if he starts playing more games at that level? I wonder, at what extent do you have to take the standards that you're seeing a player at into the equation too?
I think that's important that you said that, because it is true that I don't know if a player should necessarily be punished for being at a better club and maybe not playing as much as someone who's at a much lower standard but plays every game. Like, we actually said it about Troy Parrott as well, and I know Troy Parrott's only 17, but and Mick Parrott is saying, oh, if Troy Parrott wants to play for Ireland, he needs to get in the Spurs team. But should Troy Parrott be punished for being at one of the best teams in Europe, when if he was at probably 12 or 13 of the Premier League clubs, he'd be getting some sort of consistent playing time?
It's like Aaron Connolly coming on for Brighton. Exactly. Would Troy Parrott be starting for Brighton if he was there at this age?
Yeah, so I think that Morris makes a good point. Just one other player I wanted to point out was Glenn Whelan is now back and he's playing for Hearts. So we can... He's after playing 90 minutes in their last two games, so we can fully expect Glenn Whelan to be in the Ireland team. And I don't think there's any doubt he's going to be starting on Thursday night.
Well, I was going to come on to that, because if we have to look ahead, that's the roundup of how the players did the weekend. But we must look ahead now to Thursday night and the Switzerland game. Gary, you've been looking back at the Switzerland-Denmark game over the weekend, as you've you and your nerdy ways, you're becoming a Morris Mark II here.
He's rubbing off.
Just watching random games.
Well, it is random and it isn't. Like, Switzerland played Denmark in March, so it was their... Switzerland have only played two games in this qualification campaign, and the first one was against Georgia. So we can't... I don't know how much stock we can put into that one. But they played in the UEFA Nations League playoffs. So again, you wouldn't discount those games. But the Denmark game, I thought, was an important one to look at for a couple of reasons. Firstly, Shaqiri didn't play for Switzerland.
Yep.
And Shaqiri's not going to
play. That Shaqiri thing is mad, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
That is, you would never see that happening with an Irish player. Like, you'd probably see the opposite, where Irish players would forego, they'll decide, I'm not going to play, it's almost like a GA thing, I'm not going to play club football this year because I want to concentrate on playing for Ireland.
Yeah, and I was saying in the office during the week, I wonder, does it kind of tell you what Switzerland are expecting out of Ireland, that they think that they might not need their best player to get a result?
But like, I wonder, we must look into the Swiss reaction, like with some Swiss fans. Like, surely, like, if this happened, imagine whoever it is, like, what player, like, say it was Shane Duffy, who's after been dropped at the weekend or something and decided, you know what, actually, I'm pulling out of the Ireland squad because I need to concentrate on getting back into the team at Brighton or whoever. Like, it'd be a national media scandal.
But yeah, like, it absolutely wouldn't, especially the... Like, to what extent would...
In fact, Saipan is basically based on that.
That's what I thought. I was literally about to say that. To what extent would the Irish psyche be wrapped up in what has happened before in terms of how that would influence what has come after?
But that was only a friendly.
Yeah, but... So Shaqiri, like, I know there was some people online saying, oh, well, he's no loss anyway, but Shaqiri's one of those players who might not necessarily look so brilliant in the Premier League, but when you see him at international level, he stands out miles.
Yeah.
He's also their top scorer.
And we've seen what he did in World Cups. He scored a hat-trick in the World Cup for Switzerland. So, you know, so he wasn't playing in that game against Denmark. That game finished 3-3. It was in Switzerland. But Switzerland were 3-0 up with 83 minutes played, and they completely fell apart. So I went back and I just looked to see, first of all, what way they'd set up, but what happened in those around 10 minutes, including injury time, to see them completely fall apart. So looking at the highlights, the first thing you notice about Switzerland is that they actually play very deep, and compared to Ireland in that way. For this game, anyway, maybe they were expecting more quality out of Denmark, but we've seen that they aren't. we drew with them already in the group. You know, they're not necessarily world beaters, but that did stop Denmark getting the ball into dangerous areas playing between the four. They played two deep banks of four, pretty much. Denmark were kind of restricted to long shots. But going forward, and this I found this interesting, pretty much all of Switzerland's attacking play seemed to be coming via crosses and getting ball out wide and delivering into the penalty area.
The United way.
Yeah, and I think that was probably a factor of Shaqiri not being there, so I reckon it's something we could see again. And if there's one thing that Ireland can deal with defensively, it's balls into the penalty area. If you hit balls into Shane Duffy and Richard Keogh, they're going to clear them. So I think that's a plus for Ireland if they decide to go that way. Two of their three goals came that way, where they actually won the second ball. And winning the second ball seems to be a big thing for them, where they knock it in, knock it down. The other goal was a long-range thunder blaster from Granit Xhaka, which went on his bad foot, and he's their captain. But I reckon that's probably not something that's going to happen again. So, but when the claps came, right, it was the 83rd minute. The first goal was a ball into the penalty. And this is what, another thing. When the pressure came on Switzerland, they couldn't deal with balls into the penalty area, long balls. And
Jesus, there's one thing we love is a ball into the penalty area.
Exactly. And Denmark, for all their talk about how they were a total football team when they were deriding Ireland, that's what they did. And it worked, because the first goal was terrible. It was a free kick out wide at the corner of the box. Eriksen crossed it in, and Switzerland didn't attack it. They just stood there and let the ball bounce. And one of the Jorgensen poked it home at the far post. So the second goal was, again, terrible defending, where Wonder players just fell asleep and was about, I'm not exaggerating, 5 yards behind the rest of the defence to play with Denmark on side. So that let them in for the second. And the third goal was kind of similar to the first. It was a long ball launched in. Switzerland failed to deal with it. They kind of half cleared it and then they just chipped it back into the box. One of the Swiss defenders headed it straight back up in the air. It fell. Denmark scored. It was 3 goals in 8 minutes. And they absolutely, it was a collapse. It's like one of the worst I've seen. Like, when's the last time you've seen a team concede 3 goals in 8 minutes?
So, Gary, how much are we going to win by on Thursday? What I've been listening to now is just how shit Switzerland are.
That analysis to me says that he might not be playing for Brighton right now, but we need 2 Shane Duffys. A Shane Duffy at the back and a Shane Duffy at the front, and we'll win this game.
What I thought it said was that while Ireland are limited in a lot of ways, the strengths we have could capitalise on the weaknesses they have. They seem to struggle with long balls into the box and clearing the ball first time. So it's definitely from set pieces and even in open play, that'll be something Ireland will look to exploit. And on the other end, I think Ireland will have a good chance of stopping their wing play, and what the balls into the penalty area will be something that Ireland will be able to deal with. So, and then again, they came under pressure. So if Ireland can put them under pressure right away, it'll be interesting to see how they react, and hopefully we have a full Aviva and the crowd behind them. So I think, to summarise it, our strengths can get at their vulnerabilities. I'm not necessarily thinking it's going to work out that way, but I think there's a chance that if things go the right way for us, that we can get a positive result in this game based on that.
I've been doing a little bit of, sketching
right.
on my notepad. I want you lads to pick the team, not that you think should start, because that's always going to be a different story. What team do you think will start? Let's pick the Irish 11. We've got Randolph in goals, obviously.
Yeah.
You've got Seamus Coleman at right back.
Yep.
It's going to be Keogh, and no matter how good John Egan's doing at the minute, and Duffy, central defence. And we're going 4 at the back, I presume.
It will be 4 at the back.
Yep. Stevens, left back.
Yeah.
Where do we go from here?
Glenn Whelan is playing, isn't he?
Glenn Whelan's definitely playing, 100%. If it was against one of the lesser teams, you could say he mightn't, but he's definitely playing.
So Whelan's playing. Howrahan?
Howrahan is going to play. And I assume it's going to be Jeff Hendrick, because James McCarthy's not in the squad, Harry Arthur's not in the squad. I know Hendrick hasn't been playing for Burnley, but...
So Whelan and then Hendrick and Howrahan in front of him?
Yeah.
Where do we go from here, lads?
It's going to be 4-5-1, I think. But
I'm going to say this. I might enrage Gary, but like, we have to be realistic about what's going to happen, what we'd like, and what we.
I know what's coming next.
James McLean is playing this.
James McLean on the left wing
is going to play. Yeah. Callum Robinson is going to play on the right, I think.
Robinson on the right.
And David McGoldrick is going to play up front.
McGoldrick. So who?
I think that's the team that started against Gibraltar in the last game, if I'm not wrong. That team, you can put that in the bank. That is the team that's going to play.
So we've got going back from
no doubt whatsoever.
From back to front, Randolph back four of Coleman, Keogh, Duffy, and Stevens. Glenn Whelan sitting in the hole, minding the house, and then you've got Robinson on the right, Huron, Hendrick, and James McLean with McGoldrick up front.
The only possible change to that team that you could see is if Mick McCarthy fancies O'Dowda and maybe doesn't play.
O'Dowda hasn't started in recent weeks for Bristol either. He's coming off the bench at the weekend.
And I think Robinson has to be in the team. But the only thing is you're playing him out of position there. And again, it comes back to what you were saying earlier about is 3-5-2 the way Ireland should be playing, because I know there's no Doherty now, but Coleman would equally be adept at playing as a right wing back, I think.
Yeah.
And
the thing is, though, if you go to switch to 3-5-2, the only thing I can see changing there is that Whelan gets dropped and then the Howard and Hendrick just sit deeper.
No, I don't think so. I think, see, our major weakness at the minute is that we don't have wingers. Robbie Brady's injured. James McLean is completely off the boil. Callum Robinson can play out wide, but he's better playing through the middle. Sean Maguire is injured. I think if you played 3-5-2 with Ireland, and even this game with Doherty out injured, you could play a back three of Duffy, Keogh, and Egan. And Egan, I was reading a couple of articles during the week, everyone's saying he's the key to the Sheffield United system. He's the players in the middle of the back three. He dictates everything for them. I think that would be a really solid back three. Then you'd have Coleman and Stevens as your two wing-backs. We've seen what Stevens is doing for Sheffield United. Yeah. He's been amazing.
I think that back five at the minute with Doherty 100 picks itself.
Then, because you have Stevens and you have Coleman playing higher up the pitch, you don't need to play wingers. So you could play your midfield three. You could play that same midfield three if you wanted. You could play your Whelan, your Hendrick, your Horan, and that probably will be the three. But then you can play two up front, and you can have McGoldrick and Robinson do the same job that they do for Sheffield United.
So it's
McLean drops out, and for Egan, basically, is the only change. But it's a big change in system, and I think that would allow Robinson to roam. And he's really good. He's good on the wing, but he's better when he's not restricted, and he can start central areas, he can drop deep, he can run in behind, he can move from side to side. And then McGoldrick obviously does a great job in that system as well. I think that will be an interesting thing for Mick McCarthy to do, but I don't think he will. I think he's going to, if Ireland were going to play a three at the back, we would have seen it already in this campaign. He's not going to break it out for a game against Switzerland.
It is a thing that if you look at over the last two seasons, probably, well, Duffy aside, and Duffy obviously, this probably would be an issue for him as if you look what Brighton is. But again, like, Brighton are only 3 or 4 games into the season, and it's something that it could actually benefit Ireland in the long run if he does get used to playing in the back three. But if you're looking at the three best players we've had in all of last season and the first few games, albeit it's only a few games so far, our three best Premier League players have been Robinson, McGoldrick, and Doherty. And Seamus Coleman, say. So, like,
and Stevens, you mean?
Oh, sorry, Stevens, I should say, not McGoldrick. And they're all suited to a 3-5-2 system.
Yeah. I think it's not going to happen, but I think it's something that maybe we could see in the not too distant future when Stephen Kenny is in charge, maybe. But
interesting stuff, Gary. We'll wait. Obviously, now that we've said it, it's obviously going to end up in 3-5-2 on Thursday, and we look forward to that. But before we go, it's time for our weekly football quiz.
Okay.
As we said this week, it's the turn of Gary against Morris in which of these Irish players has more caps. Right, Gary, as the defending champion, the undefeated reigning champion, despite the fact there's only been 1 week of this.
Undisputed as well.
Yeah, you get to go first this week. Sorry, Morris. This is the guess which player has had more caps. And I'm going to start you off with Kevin Kilbane against Steve Staunton. Who has more caps?
Kevin Kilbane.
You sure?
Pretty sure.
Final answer.
Yeah.
Ding, ding, ding. Gary Connaughton, 1 point. Kevin Kilbane has 110 caps. Steve Staunton won 102. Morris Brosnan, the pressure's on you already. Aidan McGeady versus Glenn Whelan. We talked about Whelan a good bit. He's still tipping away. McGeady still could get, still probably hoping to get back into that Ireland team at some stage. But who has more caps right now?
Isn't he?
Pardon?
I see Stephen Elliott promoting him for his play with Sunderland a lot, that he's turning up there.
Yeah, he is doing well.
I'm inclined to go with McGeady. Has to be near 100 caps, like. He's been around for ages.
So was Glenn Whelan, though.
Yeah, but Glenn Whelan came into the midfield for a trap. Wait, does Glenn Whelan have Glenn Whelan has 100 caps too?
This is like the GAA podcast, Gary, where Morris will keep asking us questions as if he's expecting us to tell us the answer. Yeah, I'd say you're a hellish person to play poker with. Just refusing to show your hand until the other person tells you what they have.
So I'm going to actually, does this go to Gary if I get it?
No.
Okay, so I'm going to talk to my logic. I'd say McGeady has about 95 caps in and around. Maybe he's even, I don't think he has 100. I think I'd know that if he did. Glenn Whelan, like, for the testimonial, I remember...
Gary, Morris, I'd like to remind you that there are, I think, 8 questions here, so we don't have all day. Come on now. This is only the first question.
Okay. McGeady.
So you're not going with Whelan?
I think it's Whelan, isn't it?
Was that for his 100? It was for his 100, wasn't it?
No, it was like he's
no,
like
you're right, Morris. It was 92 caps for Glenn McGeady, 84 for Glenn Whelan.
I didn't think McGeady had 92 caps. I thought McGeady was around 75.
I would have thought he was closer to 100, but maybe not exactly 100. So I get the point there.
You do, 1-0.
The pressure on now.
The process does me well.
Gary, Richard Dunne or Andy Townsend?
Richard Dunne wasn't in the team when he was that. I go Richard Dunne, but I'm not confident on it at all.
What would you have said, Morris, if you had this question?
I think it was Richard Dunne too, you know.
You're both right. 80 caps for Richard Dunne, only 70 for Andy Townsend.
Yeah.
2-1, Gary. 100% record so far. John Giles versus Ian Hart. He went to answer and he hadn't even heard the second option.
That is a toughie, you know, I have to say.
I'm going to say Ian Hart.
You're going to say Ian Hart?
Yeah.
Despite the fact that John Giles has been playing for Ireland since he was a child and was a player manager.
Hang on, he doesn't get it. Here's my logic for...
Morris supposed to get asking the rules.
I could well be wrong, but Giles has... Like, I remember looking this up for Dunfield. They have way less caps because of way less games. Mm. So that's why I'm just going to say... Ian Hart, I said.
I would have said the same logic as well.
It's 2-2. Ian Hart has indeed got more caps than John Giles. 64 caps for Ian Hart, 59 for John Giles. These are getting lesser and lesser caps as well as we go down, okay. So it's getting quite hard. Your next one, Gary, is a battle of the right backs. We talked about Coleman and Doherty.
I know who it's going to be already.
Who is it going to be?
One of them's definitely going to be Steve Finnan anyway, is it?
Yes, and the other one's Gary Kelly. Yeah. Which of them has more caps?
Kelly,
of course, played a bit of right midfield for Ireland as well in his time.
Steve Finnan, I think Steve Finnan has around 45 caps for Ireland, but I don't know how many more if Gary Kelly has more. I'm going to go Steve Finnan.
You're saying Steve Finnan has more caps than Gary Kelly?
I am, yeah.
You're dead right.
Oh.
You just got, that's a good shout. Steve Finnan has 53 caps, Gary Kelly has 52.
Wow.
That was a coin flip.
Morris, the pressure's on you now to keep this going. We've got 3-3. I'm going to have to come up with a tiebreaker if things keep going like this. James McLean versus Dennis Irwin.
Oh my God.
This is a doozy of a question, isn't it?
So,
now just to remind you for the third question in a row, if you get this wrong, it does not pass to Gary.
James McLean.
You're going with James McLean against Dennis Irwin. You know, you're a legend.
He's right.
He's dead right. 60 caps for James McLean, 56 for Dennis Irwin.
Feels like James McLean has more.
Gary, this is your final question.
Yeah, I need to get this one right now.
You need to get this one right, or else Morris can steal it at the end.
Mm.
John Walters or Kevin Doyle?
Jesus. Because John Walters didn't break into the team until he was in his late 20s. The Euro 2012 campaign. Kevin Doyle would have played every game from about 2007 to 2012 or 2013. Oh, Kevin Doyle.
You're going with Kevin Doyle?
Yeah.
How would you have ended up, Morris?
I think the same.
Kevin Doyle it is. 63 plays 53. Tears the cap. So this is all down to this, Morris, to stay in the game.
This is
and to be honest, the draw hasn't been kind yet. Because this is a tough one.
Come on, give it to me.
David O'Leary or Ronnie Whelan?
Oh, come on. Come on. That's. So I got the...
You got the... The only, like, if you go look at historically speaking... The lads who have played well before your time. You'd be talking John Giles, David O'Leary and Ronnie Whelan, and you've got all those questions. Look at, that's just the way the draw goes.
Based off my logic of the amount of games, although, like, David O'Leary.
You're going with David O'Leary?
Yeah.
David O'Leary has 15 more caps than Ronnie Whelan.
Ooh.
It's a draw. 4-4. Once again, we're going into overtime. So now I have to come up with a tiebreaker on the spot. So we're going to play the fable game that I invented.
I hate this game. Myers is always good at it as well.
That I invented on the GA podcast. It's guess the player I'm thinking of, right? So this is an Irish player, former, past or present. And Morris, you're going to get to go first, given that Gary got to go first in normal time. So basically, anyone who hasn't heard this before on the GAA show, the lads, it's like What's Not. The lads have to ask me questions about the player. If the answer is yes, they have to be all yes, no answer questions. If it's yes, they get to ask another question, and they can keep guessing if they want. But if they get, if it's a no question, then it passes, or no answer, it passes over to the other person. So Morris, you can go first.
Is he a current player?
No. Gary.
Has he retired in the last 3 years?
From international football? Yeah. No.
Ian Hart?
No.
Was he born in Ireland?
No.
Did he play in the 90s?
Did he play in the 90s? He would have started... I'm going to say yes, because he would have started his professional career in the 90s. But he wouldn't be known for his time in Ireland in the 90s.
Was he a striker?
Yes.
Robbie Keane?
No.
He wasn't born in Ireland, you said, didn't you?
I did. Oh, sorry. So Morris should get...
Clinton Morrison.
Fuck. It is!
I knew it before he even said it. I actually knew it before he even said it.
I saw, you should see the shock. For those who listen to the podcast, you should see the shock in Morris's eyes when the thing clicked with him that he wasn't born in Ireland. And Morris just straight away, it flashed before his eyes. So Clinton Morrison.
That's what I get now from concentrating.
Exactly. Congratulations, Gary.
Pull it out of the bag 2 weeks in a row.
Exactly. Undefeated, still undefeated, undefeated, undisputed, reigning champion of our weekly football quiz, Gary Colleton. Thank you very much for taking part, Gary. Morris, thank you for joining us this week as well.
I'm
unlucky.
So
in
much
quiz.
More annoyed than I should be about that.
And thank you everybody for listening. If this is your first time listening, be sure to subscribe to balls.ie podcasts. You can find us on all good podcast apps, or indeed if you just want to listen to the football stuff, search football on balls.ie on any podcast app and you'll be able to find our football only feed. If you're already subscribed, please do rate and review the show. We'll be back later on in the week with a rugby show tomorrow. Morris, yourself and Mick are going to be back with World and Union. We'll also have the build up with Ladbrokes on Wednesday, but until next week, mind yourself.